There's just a lot of different variables that lead to success. But I found that the three things that really matter, like number one is like, are you curious? I found the people that are curious, they ask questions to the manager, they're in enablement, they're front row in the room at the training sessions. These are the people that are gonna do well. Like number two is the people that are resourceful with the tech. So they understood how to use Sales Navigator, their sales engagement tool. They know how to use these things and be really, really successful. And three, they understand their buyer really well. So they know back and forth what the buyer personas are. They're able to speak to them with confidence.
Welcome to Winning Streaks. I'm your host, Tanvir Mustafa. And every week I get deep into the stories and strategies of experts, champions, business moguls, and industry leaders to find out how you can win the day and win at life. If you're committed to never settling for the status quo and consistently challenging yourself to new heights, then this is the show for you. In return, I commit to bringing you insightful, practical, and no BS conversations that will help you create your next big win.
My guest today has gone through the entire sales gauntlet, starting out as an SDR in 2017 to director, VP, and now CEO. For the past 8 years, he's been an influential voice in the tech sales space, from starting the first sales show for SDRs called SDR Chronicles to then full-time sales trainer at arguably one of the top sales training companies in the world, Sell Better. He has taught some of the world's fastest scaling companies to drive pipeline, and now he's the founder and CEO at Ascension Media Productions, where he helps companies produce B2B content that builds trust and drives leads. Introducing my friend, Morgan Ingram. Welcome to the show, brother.
Thanks, man. How's everybody doing?
Everyone's doing awesome. I'm doing awesome. We're all good here.
Good.
I got to thank you, man. Like, honestly, I joined Salesforce as an SDR back in 2018. And when I joined, I was like, I want to get really good really fast. So I typed it in on YouTube, like something like how to excel or how to succeed as an SDR. I'm pretty sure the first thing that came up was you, SDR Chronicles, you know,
hey, OG.
Back then some low lighting in the video, but some great quality.
Oh my gosh. The editing on that content is so crazy. It's so bad looking back on it.
Yeah, but it must be amazing to look back on that. I mean...
It is.
The editing, there's all that, whatever. But the content itself, I'm pretty sure you were my onboarding training. Like, I had onboarding training at Salesforce, obviously. Mm-hmm. But when it came to like the tactics and techniques and execution and consistency, like, you were one of the big voices, actually the only voice, I think, for SDRs at that time. So I just want to start off by saying thank you for that. Thank you for taking the jump and doing that, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. I was just on a live earlier and we were talking about that, and it was 8 years ago. It feels like 30 years ago, to be honest. It just feels like a completely different lifetime, but it's still crazy how much that impacted people. And that was the whole goal, is to impact people. But it's still crazy to this day how people refer to that. Yeah. And it was just like, that was it.
Yeah.
Whiteboard room, just chopping it up, you know. It's crazy. Yeah.
And I'm sure it helped me. I'm sure it's helped hundreds, if not thousands, of other SDRs out there who are still probably YouTubing the same thing and coming across your content.
Yeah.
What I didn't know, and what I just found out, just getting ready for the show today, is that the idea was sparked after you met Gary Vee.
Yes.
And yes, I've met Gary Vee 3 times. I got to be security guard for him, actually, at an event that he hosted here in Toronto, which was a crazy experience. But tell me about that day. Like, what happened that day, and why did you decide to start this thing called SDR Chronicles, you know, eight years ago?
So I've also met him 3 times. So that's funny. It's 3. I'm seeing him in, I should go into an event that he's going to be out in July. So I'll chop it up with him there. But, I believe there's moments in time where you watch a talk or you're at a talk or you're watching a video or you're listening to something and you realize that it's for you. It really actually isn't for anyone else. It's directly towards you. So I went to a conference called Rainmaker, which is sales conference is what they used to call Rainmaker out of Atlanta. So I was in Atlanta. So I was right there, and he was the keynote. Now everyone else in the sales team had no idea who this person was. But I was like fired up. I was like, this is Gary Vee. Like, what are y'all doing? And like, nobody was excited except for me. So I went, and towards the end of the talk, he was like, look, if you want to be successful, get ahead of the game right now in sales, you need to create your own brand. and he was like, he was like, 500 of you are going to start and quit in a week. Then he's like, 250 of you are going to do it for like 3 months. Then he's like, 10 of you are going to stay consistent for 6 to 12. And he's like, only 1 to 2 of you are going to actually make it and be successful. That whole entire end bit of that talk gave me goosebumps, being like, all right, I'm going to go be that person. This is the calling. Because I'd already been thinking about doing it. And I had already gotten called out by Ralph Barcy at the conference because he was there. And I told him 3 months ago I was going to start this. So it just was kind of like, bro, what are you doing? You need to start this. So I talked to him after Gary Vee. He was doing his book signing. I talked for like 5 minutes and he gave me like a plan of what to do. And I created the YouTube channel that night. I made the logo myself. And I came up with the YouTube description and I filmed the video literally the next day. And the rest was history.
That's amazing, man. Such quick turnaround from inspiration to action. And now,
yeah,
like since then, you've been doing it for 8 years, right?
Yeah, I feel so old.
How's it feel? How's it feel after doing this for so long? You know, putting out content for that amount of time, hundreds of videos, like, you know, hundreds of LinkedIn posts, like you've been doing this with such consistency for such a long time. How does it feel to you now looking back, and what lessons would you impart on like the modern sales rep listening to this now?
I think I'm very grateful and blessed, man. I speak to a lot of people that are really good at creating content and they've been doing it for 2-3 years and they have grown really fast or seen more engagement than me, but it's also just the consistency of how long I've done something. It's one of the few things in life I've stayed consistent with is like just creating content, and it just shows how much I love it and things of that nature. But it feels great because I posted a picture the other day of a talk that I did in Paris. It's like 250 people in the room. Mm-hmm. And I put it on Twitter and I was like, younger Morgan would be proud. And that would have never happened if I didn't decide to just film the videos. Like, sure, maybe it would have happened, but I just don't think it would have happened at the speed and at the magnitude and impact if I did not post those videos. So I'm always just thankful and blessed that I did it. And also it gives me a subconscious skill set in content. I can look at content and be like, boom, 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 here's what you need to do, right? And, you know, sometimes I don't take my own advice, which is the fallacy of anybody who gets really good at a skill. But like, yeah, it's just a huge blessing to have the skill, and also a blessing that I've been able to impact the people the way that I've had and build the relationships that I've had as well. It has definitely changed my life for sure. And it gives me a lot of leverage to build my business and continuously have a lot of time freedom and location freedom. And those are the things that people crave for, and mm-hmm. and I have that. So in that, it's happened. Some would say a long time, but 8 years in the grand scheme of things is actually not that long. It's a super fortunate thing. Mm-hmm. My advice to people that are in the modern sales realm, just around content or in general?
Around creation, like, do you believe that every sales rep should be creating content?
No.
Why or why not?
So I used to believe yes, but I've changed my mind and I'm just no. Because not every single person should be doing it, because that isn't inherently the skill set or what they should be designed to do, right? A team of 100 sales reps creating content consistently, it won't work. Now, I could be proven wrong, but I've tried it and I've tested it. It just isn't the move. Mm-hmm. The move is to find people who can be your curators. It can be consistent. And here's the caveat to this, right? I think everyone should do it, but I know they won't. So that's why I say no, everyone should not do it. But they should aim for it. I think everyone should be creating content. So you can build your brand, you're gonna have leverage. But at the same time, I know everyone won't. So I'm like, yeah, I don't think everyone should. I think it's fine. Mm-hmm. But I wish everyone would. Let's put it that way. But I know that they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. I think the people that have an earning to grow their brand and have leverage and go beyond just sales, they should be doing it, because your personal brand is going to enhance everything that you're doing. And I think ultimately at the end of the day, if you're, especially if your audience is on a platform and they're active, you should 100% be creating the content. But I think it's actually more about being a curator of that content rather than being a creator. I don't think everyone's going to go my path, and my path was very completely different. And I was doing the role and I was editing and I was creating content. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of sacrifice and time. I don't think a lot of people are willing to do that, to be fair, not to call anyone out and say that you don't work hard. I'm just saying, I just think people are willing to make those sacrifices that I did to create the content and also hit quota and be a top rep at the same time. It wasn't like I was a bottom rep. I was one of the top people at the organization. So it's just a completely different mindset, and you have to be more long-term focused than short-term.
You mentioned the sacrifice and the time, the work that goes behind it. What was the hardest part, or what's been the hardest part of the journey of being a, not just now you're a CEO, now you're a founder, but you're still creating, right? So what are some of the mistakes you've made, and what's been the hardest part about that journey?
The hardest part, look, right now, being a creator is not as difficult. Here's why. Because there's other people doing it. So you have support groups, you have a system, you have all these things. When I did it, there wasn't anyone at all. So there was no one to talk to. That was the hardest part of it. There's something that you believe in. You're the only person that can see it. Everyone is making fun of you and they don't get it. Even your own people, like your own friends, my mom and dad, they were here this week and we were joking about it. Like they didn't get it. And it's my mom and dad. So you can imagine how other people don't get it and they don't even know you. Yeah. That was the hardest part, man. Like I would get messages telling people telling me like I didn't know anything, I wouldn't make it. That's hard. You don't really get that nowadays. Like, and if you get it, you have a support group and you can laugh about it. I didn't have that. It was just me. Mm-hmm. And I just saw it, but I knew, I was like, I know if I do this, like I will have a lot of leverage moving forward. And so it's my brand. And no matter what happens in my life, I always will be good. Mm-hmm. Even if this all fails, because I took a step in a direction that no one was even thinking about at the time. Mm-hmm. And it paid off. Well, on the things of that nature, but that was honestly the hardest part. I'd say the other part was balancing both. I had a fantastic leader. I had a great team. If I was in another organization, I don't think it would have gone as well. Because I think my leader would not have gotten it. I think they would have probably tried to tell me to stop. I think the reps would have been against me. But I was in a fortunate place where like people respected that I could do both, and my leader got it. But I think if I was somewhere else, it would have been not as good. So I think the thing is that like balancing both is hard. Like I was a high performing SDR, hitting 100, 200, sometimes 300% per month, while also creating content.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. and, but then again, what that leads into is I didn't really have like a social life. So, you know, the only people I'd hang out with was my team, you know, like that was it. I only hung out with them. Which is fine. I always want to make those sacrifices, but you have to give something up in order to grow. There was a video I was watching. I forgot exactly what it was, but they were talking about how in order to reach your goals, it actually isn't about what you're willing to do more of. It's what you're willing to give up and sacrifice. No, Dan Martell.
Nice.
He talks about how it's not about what did you do? It's about what did you give up? So I gave up a lot of stuff. Even today as a founder, there's a lot of things that I'm giving up now because I know where I'm trying to go. And so that was a big, big thing for me. And so some mistakes. I wish I would have. There was no playbook on what was happening, man. Like even today, I don't even think people may get the same volume, but I was getting like 200, 500 messages a week. So
wow, that's a lot.
Yeah. And I answered all of them for like 3-4 years. Now, you know, it's a little bit harder, but it was so much going on, but I was like 22 years old. So I didn't really know how to like maneuver it as much. I answered everyone, I did everything, but it was just a lot going on.
Yeah.
And there was no one else that I had to talk to about it. Like I didn't have any other creator friends. And I, you know, I was just doing stuff on YouTube and LinkedIn, but I didn't think to reach out to anyone else because I just thought it was just me doing this. There wasn't anyone to like relate to or speak to. And the people I, you know, I wasn't going to, Gary Vee and I weren't texting, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like I didn't know who to talk to. So a lot of it was, I had to learn it myself. Like, how do I engage with people? How do I manage it? Like, people asked me to do like not a masterclass, but like a webinar. I was like, okay, like, how does that work? It was just all these things that, like, now it's super simple to go reach out to someone. There's 1,000 creators on LinkedIn. So like, yeah, you can get someone to help you out. But like, I think the mistake was, is that because a lot of people weren't reaching out, I wish I would have just been like more intentional on like, who's reaching out? How can I help? I could have categorized it more. It was just so much volume that was happening. I think another mistake is I would have documented the success of content more. I just was so focused on like, how do we make an impactful piece today? I didn't like backtrack like people do today, which is really good advice. I mean, like, oh, okay. Like, can I go in here and then like, say, for example, this post did really well. How do I replicate this post? What was the hook? What was the call to action? I wasn't even that cerebral. I was just like, let's put out content. So say, cause I could have studied more for sure. And I think another thing is like, I would have switched to own audience earlier. I didn't even know what a news. Yeah. I didn't know what an email list was. I was just like, I'm on a platform. I'm creating content. I'm getting engagement, whatever. If I would have done it earlier, like I would be 1,000 times ahead, but I try not to look at things that I could have done. Like, it is what it is. It's already, I have to fix today. I don't, can't fix yesterday, but I would have started the email list way earlier for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you, in hindsight, you'll always find things to pick apart and be like, oh, there's things every I could have done better for sure. But you did the most important thing, which is like when anybody comes to me now about personal branding, and I've, you know, I've been posting on and off on LinkedIn probably for the last 7 years, but only really started to take it seriously within the last 2. And so whenever people ask me like, okay, well, what should I do to up-level my personal brand or be a creator, et cetera? My thing is like, throw everything else out the door. And for your first, like if you're just getting started, consistency is your best friend. I don't care what you put out, just put out content for 100 days straight and continue to build this muscle of consistency. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but that sort of ties in with your philosophy of keep dialing.
Exactly. Like, it's the same thing. Exactly.
Yeah. You've had this philosophy for a long time. You used it at Sell Better. You've been preaching it for as long as I think I've known you. What is it? What's the philosophy around keep dialing in and outside of sales?
Keep dialing and the philosophy and the focus around it is to continuously pursue your goals and dreams no matter what. It's not about quitting. Now, there's levels to that, right? There should be things where like, okay, you should quit this because it really isn't going anywhere. But for the most part, keep dialing is like, let's keep going. Keep going to go reset result and go get those goals and accomplish what you're looking to accomplish. That's the premise, right? And so that's the whole keep dialing mindset. A lot of people will take that and think it's like keep cold calling. Like, yeah, okay, I could see that. But it really is about just pursuing your goals with a relentless attitude and doing everything you can to become the accomplished person that you want to be. And so that's what I think about all the time. Like, even right now in transparency, there are things that I have to level up on and skill up on. And it's really easy for people in my position to be comfortable and coast. Like, I don't really have to push harder than I am right now if I don't want to. I can live a pretty comfortable life and be fine in the grand scheme of things from the world perspective. But there's also that yearning feeling that I think a lot of people do have, where it's like, you know, you haven't really reached that full potential and you know you're capable of more. But in order to go get more, you have to go be more. And you have to go be around people that make you uncomfortable. And so a lot of things that I'm doing right now is the keep dialing aspect, which is I'm taking a lot of resources and investing into coaching and becoming better in a lot of different skill areas, where I realize that I'm pretty good at this, but I could be even better if I had the right coaching, et cetera. And that's how I think about things. So like, I think that you can always be better and you can always improve. It's the mom mentality, 1% better every single day. And I live by that. But I know a lot of people don't want to do that all the time. I think that's fair. But for me, like, this is like my focus. Like, I'm always going to keep dialing and I'm always just going to be relentless, because like, there's just a lot to acquire. There's a lot of opportunities out there and I'm not trying to waste really any of it.
Yeah. You and I have so many similarities, man. Sometimes it scares me. Like, met very Gary Vee 3 times. That's Kobe crazy. Is like my biggest idol. And, you know, when he passed away the day before my birthday, my 24th birthday, at my mom's birthday.
Wow.
And I ended up getting, just like you, I know you have a photo in front of a mural in LA. I also have a photo in front of a mural in LA.
Yeah.
and obviously you led the way with working with John Barros, you know, he ran Sell Better. Now I work with Ian Koniak, and there's, you know, one of the top sales training coaching companies out there. So it's just crazy to see those parallels. Now, you and I actually met in person at a Christmas party that Salesforce was hosting. And I think you were in town to do like training, either with, you know, somebody at Salesforce or whatnot. You remember that night? Yeah.
I do remember that night. We, so I was there to do a training. I know I did. It was a public workshop. That's what it was. I was there for a public workshop, and then you were just like, "Yo, come to the Salesforce party." I was like, "Yeah, bet. Let's pull up." So that's what that night was. That was a fun night. It was a good time.
It was a good time. I remember that. And so that at that time, you know, you were working at Sell Better. You were a full time sales trainer, and you were traveling a lot to do this sales training, working with a lot of companies. Now, after having worked with like thousands upon thousands of sales reps and training them on a regular basis, what were your biggest takeaways from that time? Like, what's the good, what's the bad, what's the ugly from your experience and what sales reps are facing and going through on a day-to-day basis, as well as your personal experience?
Personal experience in terms of like the traveling as a whole, like how do I feel about it? Because that's a whole different conversation itself.
Yeah, I mean, your experience doing that, like being a full-time sales trainer, and then also your like what you noticed, what your observations were with working with so many reps.
I realize that reps really fall into like four groups for the most part. It's one, the rep who naturally is pretty good at the job and they don't need a lot of coaching. They're just going to do well. Two is someone who's just a grinder. They're just going to get after it. They may not have the skill set, but they're going to get after it. They're going to get their job done. Three is the person who they're just there. They're really not paying attention. They're trying to do the best they can, but they're really not. They're not like they want to do another role. And four is the person who thinks that they're like, they think that they have accomplished all the skill set that they need, and they have stopped growing. And they are currently a good rep, but they could digress into a bad rep, or they are not that good, and then they digress into a bad rep, right? That's pretty much the categories that most reps fall into, is what I've realized. Now, within that, when you train people, there's just a lot of different variables that lead to success. But I've found that there's three things that really matter. Like, number one is, like, are you curious? I found the people that are curious, they ask questions to the manager. They're in enablement, they're front row in the room of the training sessions. These are the people that are going to do well. Like, you're curious, you want to learn more, you want to do everything you can, right? You're going to like soak it up, right? You're going to do everything that you can to be successful.
Yeah.
Number two is the people that are resourceful with the tech. So they understood how to use Sales Navigator, their sales engagement tool, their data, da, da, da. They know how to use these things and be really, really successful. And three, they understand their buyer really well. So they know back and forth what the buyer personas are. They're able to speak to them with confidence. Those three things lead to the pieces. I think where people struggle is they want to move too fast. They want to pitch and connect, or they want to connect and pitch. They want to send up 10,000 emails out. They want to do all these things that are just crazy that aren't going to help you lead to any type of results across the board.
I got a question for you. Do you think modern sales training at companies like sales enablement, a lot of companies that you worked with, that you've seen in general, just with your time in the industry, do you think it's outdated?
Most are, but that's because the people that are training them have outdated tactics. They're not like in the trenches, you know? So they're teaching on things that were successful for them, but they're not hearing what the reps are dealing with and providing solutions to that. They're providing, basically a lot of people enable as if they're enabling themselves, but not the audience, which is why it doesn't work. If you only, most managers do this too, if you only focus on what you were successful at, but don't consider the audience, then you're only teaching yourself and that one archetype versus, this is how I was successful. You have to break it down to a formula and you have to figure out how it's applicable to other people versus people are like, this is how I did it and this is it. So like, best of luck. That's not how people learn. Mm-hmm. That's where the huge stopgap is for a lot of people.
How does the current sales rep, the modern sales rep address that? What should they be doing to overcome that gap?
The modern sales rep or the leader? Because then that's a leadership thing at that point.
Both in that case. Because I'm sure, I think there's a certain amount of accountability that needs to exist at the rep level, but I also agree that with that on the leadership level, like both parties need to do their job.
It's both parties, yeah. So at the rep level, number one is, and this is what I did as a rep, like you just need to be some people won't, but I think you should be obsessed with the craft. My thing is, if you're okay, so you spend 68 to 70% of your time at this job. You have most places you have unlimited commission structure. If you just close more things, discuss more stuff, you make more money.
Yeah,
and you're already spending your time doing this.
Yeah,
so I'm like, okay, why do you not just spend more time getting better at that thing? So, I would say YouTube channel, podcasts, books, etc. Man, I don't know how many of those I listened to.
Same.
Like I was literally just obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And they would always drop a nugget I could use. So I know all this stuff, not because I made it up, because I did this when I was on a CR. How'd you come up with this intro? How'd you do subject line? Because I was listening to things on the daily. So I was like, oh, that's an interesting tip. Let me see how I can tweak it to myself. And then I added extra spit. So I never copy and pasted what people did. I just was like, that makes sense. And then I added one tweak to it, so it was mine. So then I created my own different variables on how to do it. Mm-hmm. So that's like the number one thing that reps can do. Like also as well, it's not about being modern. It's about being innovative. So, you know, Jake Dunlap and I have talked about this. He has this new thing called Innovative Sellers, new book. But the whole thing is like we talked about is like you want to be innovative. It's not about being modern. Because if you're modern, that means you're existing in what is today. So that actually isn't anything inherently special because you're modern. Everyone is modern right now. You're currently in existence. But innovative is the next step to that, which is what you want to be. So how do you innovate beyond what you're currently doing today? So what does that mean? So that means, hey, what new subject line can I be doing? What new cold call am I doing? How am I prospecting? How am I getting in front of social? These are things that you have to be doing. So that's number one. You need to be learning new stuff. Number two is, I already said it, but this still exists today. You need to be learning about the customers. You should know every vertical. How do you sell to this buyer persona? Why do they actually buy what you're doing? If you don't know that, harder to have the conversations. Then another thing is, how do you start tapping into communities that your people live in? This doesn't mean that you're selling them, but like, are you on the, I don't know, Reddit groups, the LinkedIn groups, the Facebook groups? There's so much information in those groups where you don't even have to sell. They're just having conversations. They're going to tell you what's going on. So if I'm a rep right now, if I was in this position, I'd be doing that. On top of my pipeline generation I'd be doing, these are other things I'd be taking advantage of as well.
This is crazy. We're literally talking, we're having a fireside chat within our program with Jake in like 50 minutes.
You are? Yeah. Tell us.
So it's crazy. What you're saying, I take it, like, I look at it as making the NBA, right? You get drafted into the NBA, you made the NBA, but now you got to play as hard as you can to keep your spot. Now the question is, are you trying to become a bench warmer? Are you trying to become an all-star, superstar, Hall of Fame? And the more you go through those levels, you see the players who are evolving their game, who are changing the game, who are coming up with signature moves, who are working with trainers, who are working with nutritionists, who are focusing on recovery, right? It's just the old adage, like the more you put, whether it's into free resources or paid resources, doesn't matter. It's more so, are you investing in yourself to then get the desired output that you're looking for? And if you think that that is, as a rep, in my opinion, if you think that that is completely dependent on your company and your leadership, then you probably don't belong in the game in the first place.
No, not at all.
Yeah, it's crazy. I know I saw this thing on your Instagram, which I found, again, was another crazy similarity that you and I both have. And it was one of your captions on photo, and it was like, what does success mean to you? And both.
Oh yeah, I love that video.
For both of us, it's fulfillment. Both of us. And I talk about it on the show all the time, but what does fulfillment mean to you personally? Why is that your definition of success? And how are you embodying that definition?
I set markers right after I graduated college to hit certain goals, you know, get a six-figure job, speak in different countries, get a keynote, get 100,000 followers, you know, all those things. when I hit those things, they didn't like feel the way that I thought they would feel. Like I hit it and I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I was like, what's next? So it's like, all right, well, what am I missing? And I think for me, I'm not speaking for everyone, but for me, fulfillment is, am I living and doing and being in the existence of what I was brought here to do? It's the cornerstone of that. And if you're doing that, that means that you have time freedom because you're doing something you love. So you actually, time escapes you. And also you can do what you want. And then location freedom. I don't like going to places that I have to go to. Like I have to go to it. Like I was not, that's not fulfilling to me at all. Mm-hmm. And then the fulfillment also is the impact that I have for other people. Like I said, I think I just maybe come from a different perspective on this. Is that like when I started off as an SDR, my leadership was great. But the thing is, I had never been in sales before. I had never been in tech before. So like I had to, even though I had great leadership, I still had to go through the growing pains of figuring things out, right? Also as well, as a creator, I had to go through the growing pains of figuring things out because there was no example on LinkedIn. There was other examples everywhere, but there was an example on LinkedIn. So I was like, I'll just set the example. So the thing is, fulfillment to me is impacting people that were in the same spot that I was in and helping them get faster to the spot of where maybe I'm at or maybe even beyond. Which maybe will help other people do that. And so that's fulfillment to me. As long as I am living in the existence of why God brought me here, I'm pretty good. Like, and I'm in a spot continuously getting there, like to where like it feels like that at 100%. But I get closer to that every single day. But I know if as long as I'm creating content, I'm doing my thing, I'm able to speak my voice, that's the lane I should be in. And the more you can get to that, the better that you feel overall, at least for me.
I love that definition. I went to the same thing where I hit all these accolades and yeah. It just didn't feel right. It didn't feel as sweet as I thought it would, right? And so I think the fulfillment is in the process.
Yeah, exactly.
It's in the journey. So you've funneled all that energy now into Ascension Media Productions, AMP, which has been this amazing endeavor that you're taking on, business that you've started. Why AMP? Why Ascension Media Productions? And why is it so important now?
Market. I look at opportunities before they become the thing. So when I created content on LinkedIn, it wasn't really the thing. Now it's like the thing. I'm personal branding. Everybody's talking about it. It's so great. Fantastic. So I look at it as in like B2B influencer marketing and subject matter experts is something that people are talking about, but it's not like the thing. You know, people aren't putting it. People are going to get more resources for it, but it's not like, oh my goodness, everyone in the world is doing this. People are still warming up to it. So I also look at what I've done in the past. Sales development prospecting will be there for sure, but it's not something I was as committed to learning more about. I was like, I have a lot of competency in this area, but I wasn't fulfilled by learning more. So there's like a 1% of something and then a 0.1%. The difference between 10%, 1% and 0.1% is very drastic. So if you look at, we just talked about all-star level, right? If you're in the NBA, 10% is like all-star. 1% is a superstar. 0.01% is a Hall of Fame. The skill level between a LeBron James and a DeMar DeRozan is pretty drastic. But that's the difference between like Hall of Fame and like a couple times he was a superstar.
You had to hit my guy DeMar like that, eh?
I don't know why I picked DeMar. I don't know why I was thinking DeMar. I like DeMar. I don't know why I picked him. I like DeMar a lot, but the thing is like, that's the distinction, right?
Yeah.
Like you have that piece. It's like two different things. And so if you look at everyone who was massively fulfilled and successful, they were obsessed with the craft of the game. And so I think about, am I really obsessed with sales development? It's like not as much as the content. I was creating content before I did sales development and I loved it then, been doing it for longer than eight years. I just did 8 years on LinkedIn. I was doing it on other platforms before. I used the sales development route to showcase my marketing skills and content skills because I always wanted to be in marketing and create content. That's what I always wanted to do. It just so happened that sales was the vehicle to showcase that. I never wanted to be number one in sales. I never wanted to be the top sales trainer. I never wanted to be the best in sales. It was never my goal. My goal was to create captivating, impactful content from the beginning. I just showcased that through a vehicle, which was sales. So AMP is the byproduct of what my career has been, which is being a subject matter expert in companies and driving pipeline and creating captivating content and knowing how content works. And my whole entire focus is getting better at that because I already know I like it. I already know I'm good at it. Now it's how do I become excellent? How do I take that to the next level? And I think when anybody thinks about like what hits home with them and what's special, I think that's what you should be thinking about. I think there's a level where yes, sales was good for what it was because it helped me get skills, money, et cetera. But I think there also is a time where you have to look at like what actually fulfills you. Yeah. So it doesn't drain you.
Yeah. And I don't believe I know you're at the precipice of something that's breaking out and taking off. I mean, you're seeing it with guys like the CEO of retention.com. You're seeing it with, you know, our business. Shout out to Adam right there. You know, our business, the majority of our leads are inbound leads, and it's B2B influencer marketing. It's B2C, you know, content creation from companies. Yep. and doing it in a way that's not salesy. It's just like documentation, which is what, you know, Gary tells you, document, not create, you know?
Exactly.
It's amazing, man. I love what you're building. I love what you're doing. You're one of the rare few, well, maybe not rare, because there are people who have done it, but making the transition from sales to entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. from being a seller to running the entire business. There's probably a lot of sellers, myself included, who want to do that one day and make that transition. What would you tell them for people who are interested in doing that? What should they start thinking about? What harsh realities should they consider?
let's five things. So one is, I was joking someone on my team about this, but it's 100% true. When you become a CEO and a founder, you think it's going to be like high flying and all this cool stuff. Literally, my job is the chief extinguishing officer. All I do is literally pull out fires. This is literally all I do. If there's a problem, I have to go figure it out. And I think Elon has said this, is that like, as the company grows, you get to work on the exciting stuff for sure. Cause I'm in the content, so it's a little bit different. But at the same time, if there's a problem, then like I'm the one who needs to go extinguish the fire. So it's not just like you can sell and then see you later. Like, no, you got to be involved in everything. And if there is something bad happening, you have to deal with it and you have to figure out how to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. But I'm a problem solver. So for me, it's just figuring it out. That's just who I am. But you have to know that you have to have thick skin and have the threshold, because you won't come out of this and be unscathed and be like, oh, it was easy. It's like, that's just ridiculous. Like, you will face that, which is number two. You have to be ready to truly face who you really are. When you become a founder or CEO, you learn a lot about yourself, good, bad, and ugly. And you really get to see what you're made of. Hormozy had a tweet where it's like, there are two things that are happening in your business. Either one, you keep at it and you figure it out and you're successful, or two, you quit. Those are only two things that happen. You'll pivot and you'll make adjustments until you actually get it right. Or you get frustrated mentally and you quit. Or you run out of money and resources, whatever it may be. So two is, you got to be prepared for that. Three, if you were to go on your own, make sure that you have at least 6 to 8 months of a safe haven. So if it doesn't work out, at least that you could stop it, have 6 to 8 months to find a new job or whatever and go from there. So I had that before I went in. The company became profitable very, very quickly. So that's not anything I have to worry about at this point. And, you know, we have, you know, three full-time people at this point. So yeah, I'm not inherently concerned about that piece. Like, we're profitable, you know, profit margin is pretty healthy. So that's not something I worry about as much. But at the same time, like, you do need to set that before you start. The fourth thing is that, like, when you become a founder, that doesn't mean you stop selling. You just sell more. So you're literally always selling. That's just different. You're literally recruiting people, selling. You're selling yourself. You're selling yourself on a podcast. You're selling yourself on a webinar. You're always selling. So just know that the selling does not stop. You just become, it's just, the quota is just different. Yeah. It's just like propping your company up, right?
Yeah.
Fifth thing is that, like, this is like hard to say sometimes because I think people will treat it as like a cliche thing, but I've learned to really embrace it more, is have fun in the journey, because you're going to look back on it when things do work and you're going to like laugh at all the things that you're worried about or how you got through it. Like for me, like I'm pretty dead set. I have a locked in 10-year run. We'll see what happens in the 10 years, but I have a locked in 3 to 5 year run, and then I have a locked in 10-year run of like what I'm going to do, how I'm going to go about it. And then I'll assess how I feel after that. But I feel like if you really give things a shot for a 5-year run and you just lock in, you can accomplish a lot. But you will only think about that run if you think about it as a journey and not like I have to complete this by year two. And in that journey, it's allowed me to really reflect and figure out, you know, why am I excited about it? Am I? But no, I am. So that's how I go about it.
I love it, brother. I think that's great. No BS advice for people to take heed to.
Anyone who tells you that it's easy is like probably trying to sell you something or trying to make it seem easy for you. I'm going to tell you that it's not easy at all. Like, it's just not going to be. Like, and if it is for you, that's fantastic. But large majority of people, this is a very difficult path because you're dealing with like mental, and you're dealing with like trying to conceptualize something that is new that people have to understand. And that requires just a different level of discipline.
Respect. I appreciate you, man. This has been a wonderful conversation. Where can my listeners learn more about you, connect with you, message you, all that fun stuff?
Yeah. So socials is at Morgan J. Ingram across all socials. And then if you want to hear about more we're doing, it's just AMP on social media. We're coming out with a new website. The one we have now, it's okay. But like the one we got coming out next is fire. So stay tuned for that. It's come out in the next couple weeks.
Yeah. And you guys got an awesome, for anybody out in New York City, in that area, anyone who can travel to New York City, you guys got an upcoming workshop happening.
Amp Up New York, Empire State Building, LinkedIn office, John Barrows, me, Alex Lieberman, April 16th. I'm really excited for that. It's going to be really good. I know you were at the Toronto one. We had a blast there. So excited to bring it to New York.
Yeah, anybody who's in the area or can make it to the event should absolutely try and make it to the event, because I went to the first one here in Toronto and it was a blast. I appreciate you, brother. What if there's one last piece of advice you'd give to my listeners to get their next big win? What would that be?
This also may sound cliche, but this is actually really important. I reflected on this in the past 6 months. Every decision that I made based on gut, I believe in Holy Spirit, but based on my gut, and I took action on it, has worked out very well. Every action where my gut told me not to do something, it did not work out that well. So in order to make a big move on something, you need to internalize it and be like, should I do this feel right? And then check your back end on your logic, but like, does it feel right? If your gut's like, yo, do it, it's typically pretty right. My gut's been like, hey, look, you should probably go in this direction, and it's working out very well. Or, hey, you should invest money into these things for the next 6 months and learn these things. So I'm going to do that. I find that we typically know where to execute and the answers, but we have to take a moment to really internalize that. And so I take those moments to internalize, like, okay, this is the direction I need to go. Cool, we're going to go. And if you're looking to have that next big win, it's probably something that you're evading and the steps that you should be doing, and you're not doing them. So that's what I recommend.
I love it, brother. Mr. Morgan J. Ingram, thanks so much for coming on to Winning Streaks. Always appreciate our conversations and can't wait for the next one, my man.
Absolutely, man. Have a good one.
You too.